I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection. It will be known forevermore as the summer of Androgel, when men could become real men.
I'll be back.
And women could go wild.
Ooh la la! Nice pack!
Apply Androgel once or more a day, they say, and presto.
You goddamn monk! You got too far! You'll leave me no choice! I'm gonna whip your ass!
The world will be swarming with virile, strong, potent, pumped-up men who've augmented their hormonal arsenal. The testosterone promises a return to the prime of masculine prowess, or will it become a total testosterone nightmare?
Now, I know we seem not to be real because we are beyond belief, but you can stop pinching yourself.
Yeah, that's right. Wake up and smell the muscles.
With testosterone in a tube, will the world be filled with even more road rage, with rumbles over the remote control and wrestling matches?
Get out of my face! And understand one thing. This is the WWF. It's not Sunday school.
Connection listeners, what are men looking for? Why do they want more of what they already have? At the start of the 21st century, are men just not tough enough, not manly enough, not sexy enough? We're talking about tea this hour, gasoline for the male machine. Our phone is 1-800-423-8255 or 1-800-423-TALK. To make the testosterone connection, joining us from Atlanta is Dr. Richard Spark of the Harvard Medical School, Director of Steroid Research at the Beth Israel and Deaconess Hospital in Boston. He's also the author of Sexual Health for Men, The Complete Guide. Joining us by phone from Chicago is the Playboy columnist Jim Peterson, editor of A Century of Sex. And also by phone from New York, the sociologist Michael Kimmel, author of The Gendered Society. Dr. Spark, give us the doctor's counsel here. Who really needs more tea, and what's it going to do for them?
Well, from a medical standpoint, the people who need more tea are the people who have inadequate amounts of tea. There are some men who do not make the full quotient of testosterone, and when their testosterone levels decline, they suffer. They may be weaker, they may have a lower blood count, they may have osteoporosis, and they may have sexual dysfunction. So these men who are clearly testosterone deficient are treated like men with any other hormone deficiency, much the same way as you would treat somebody with a thyroid deficiency with thyroid hormone. You treat men with testosterone deficiency with testosterone. And this is pretty standard treatment for most medical problems. Testosterone periodically resurfaces like Halley's Comet. There's a great deal of enthusiasm about this now because of the fact that there was an article recently in the New York Times Sunday magazine, and then more recently in Time magazine, a cover story. But this is really just a resurgence of interest in the same hormone about a year before Viagra was a cover story for Newsweek magazine, for example. Newsweek ran a feature on testosterone because another testosterone delivery system, the testosterone patch, was coming out at that point in time. So as new developments in testosterone delivery systems or testosterone products come along, there is a resurgence of interest in testosterone, and this is what has caused all the hoopla at the present
time. Well, we're used to that in a way, sort of new pills or delivery systems in search of a crisis or in search of a market. I assume that you're going to need a prescription for Androgel.
Yes, Androgel will be a controlled substance. All testosterone products now are controlled substances.
Let's assume also that there's going to be a huge sort of discretionary recreational fun market here. What's it going to do for ordinary people who decide to get pumped?
Well, ordinary people who decide to get pumped have been doing this for years anyway. They've been using other testosterone preparations.
Like?
Athletes have used testosterone pills. They use them in a very ritualistic pattern where that involves a gradual increase in the level of testosterone that they take prior to a competition and then tapering down just before the competition so that it will be less likely that the extra testosterone will be detected in their bloodstream. The technique is called stacking. And the athletes know that when they do this, they have to suffer the consequences of some testosterone side effects. So they have developed a whole backup system called an array, because testosterone, when given in these enormous amounts, and this is not the amount we're talking about androgel. Androgel is designed to provide physiologic replacement. The amount that athletes take is a much larger amount of testosterone, and it can cause their blood pressure to go up. The testosterone can be converted to another hormone, a female hormone called estradiol, and they have to. They can get frequently grow breasts. They have sodium retention and acne, and they've developed a whole ritual of taking medications to combat this. They even can go bald as a result of this. So that what they will do is they develop something called the array, which allows them to get rid of the fluid retention by taking a diuretic. They can combat the estrogenic effect of testosterone by taking tamoxifen, a medication that's used for women with breast cancer. And they can combat the problem with acne by taking aminocin, a standard acne medication, and the problem with balding by taking a Proscar or Propecia, which prevents the conversion of testosterone to a metabolite called dihydrotestosterone, or DHT. And DHT is responsible for some balding in some men.
By this time, a guy is running his own drugstore. But in the net, does a doctor worry about the effects and side effects of all this stuff, or is this just more of the wonder world of American life?
Well, I think most physicians who are taking care of men with testosterone deficiency give them just what are called replacement doses. The doses that cause the side effects that I mentioned above are given with the levels are very, very high. People abuse the amount of testosterone they need. For example, the normal amount of testosterone that men make, it is a relatively stable amount and can be replaced by giving a man the equivalent of about 100 milligrams of testosterone a week, and that will bring him back to a normal level. Men who had, for example, wanted to bulk up, take amounts that are in excess of that, about 15 times that. The crucial study that demonstrated this demonstrated that men could really bulk up by taking 600 milligrams of testosterone a week. And that's the sort of dose that is used by athletes. And that's the dose that's not used on a regular basis, but is available through the underground of androgen preparations that most athletes know about.
Dr. Sparks, stand by. I want to introduce Michael Kimmel, the author of The Gendered Society. Big picture, Michael, what are men looking for here, lining up in the androgel market?
Well, Chris, I appreciate the, Dr. Sparks explaining the medical technology of all of this, but I have to ask what it's not only a question of supply that pharmacology and medical technology has now advanced to the level that we can smear on some gel and up our testosterone levels, but you also have to ask why now and what the cultural significance is of this or Viagra. And I think sometimes about the way that male sexuality or the way that men feel about themselves and their drive and their bodies themselves is sort of the opposite of Lake Wobegon. You know, Lake Wobegon is where everyone's above average. I think most men think of themselves as below average. And so I think, when we talk about, all of these men having penis enlargement surgery, all these men sort of bulking up with testosterone, all these men taking Viagra, hoping that it will actually cause sexual arousal, which it doesn't do. It actually facilitates erection if the arousal is already there. It seems to me that culturally what men are looking for in this moment is some kind of way to feel more manly, to feel like they're real men, that they're really, on top of the world. And in fact, I think it points to a real problem that men have around proving masculinity in this culture.
We're still sort of absorbing Andrew Sullivan's piece in the New York Times. It was all about confidence, self-esteem, all those good assertive things. His hymn to testosterone ended on with these words. He said, "A world without the unruly, vulnerable, pioneering force of testosterone would be a fairer and calmer, but far grayer and duller place. It is certainly somewhere I would never want to live."
As if only we could locate the source of pioneering, of adventurousness, of risk-taking, intellectual risk-taking, moral risk-taking. If only we could say that that could be distilled into one little chemical cocktail. If only we could say that. But the truth is that the levels of aggression and violence in this country, for example, far, far exceed the levels of violence and aggression in other industrial countries like Britain or Norway or Switzerland. Now, you know, are we going to say those countries just are lacking in testosterone?
maybe they're going to be a new market.
I think what you're going to find in the research, what the research on testosterone says, it seems to me, is that this whole notion of causation, that testosterone causes all of these things, is only partially true. The other side is, in all of the studies of testosterone levels and competition and success, not that, you know, the athletes to the side, it is also true that two athletes with equally matched testosterone in a competition, if their testosterone levels are measured after the competition, the winner's testosterone level will have gone up, and the loser's testosterone level will have gone down. So that indicates that it's not simply that testosterone causes victory, but victory causes testosterone.
Interesting. Jim Peterson,
you.
In Chicago. Have you got your prescription yet?
No, I've kept a file on testosterone in my desk for about 5 or 6 years, and you know, the question when they, the delivery system, the patch, I could take testosterone in patch form, but then it raised that question, do you pull the patch off slow or fast? And if I was such a wimp over that, I wasn't going to. The first article I had in my file about, I'd say 8 or 10 years ago, the Village Voice ran a cover story on a bodybuilder who had been taking steroids by the gallon, by the bucketful. And the cover line was the best cover line I think I'd ever read. It was saying, here I am, I have an 18-inch neck, 22-inch calves, you know, 30-inch biceps, and my testicles are the size of peanuts. And I said, that's a trade-off. I think that's a trade-off. I think I better weigh this. And it's one of those, you know, so I've seen this new wave of testosterone. You know, it allowed Time magazine to put abs on their cover. We've lived through a decade of men's health.
So they could look like every other magazine on the newsstand, right?
Yeah, now they get to look like men's fitness. And can you have abs of steel? No, I'd sell abs of silly putty, thank you. It has less to do with the physiology and more to do with the sociology. Michael Kimmel's exactly right. We are having a masculine moment. We've had 2 or 3 decades of ridiculed masculinity, confused masculinity, Alan Alda and Phil Donahue, those aren't role models that will help anyone through teenage years. We've had masculinity in dispute, and this seems to offer a pure fountain of masculinity, a masculinity that is as clear as water, that you don't have to define it, you just take it. And we've had upheavals like this before. You go back to the 30s in the Depression, masculinity was a major topic. You had Lewis Terman, the guy who invented the IQ test, having a test to determine whether you were masculine. It had items, if you knew Yale was a lock, if you didn't read Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm, you were masculine. It came out of a time when men couldn't fulfill the traditional masculine role of employed provider for a household, and when you strip men of a given role, they start looking for masculinity in questionnaires, and now we're looking for masculinity in pills, in Viagra. And I was the Playboy advisor for 22 years, and the one question I never answered to my satisfaction, you would get questions from men who, as they age, said, you know, my erection is not as firm as it was. When I ejaculate, it no longer hits the bedpost. What's wrong? What can I do? And we had to answer, this is aging. It's happening to everybody. there's no answer. Well, now there is an answer. You can correct this with Viagra. You can correct this with Androgel. And it's going to, it is addressing a concern that we used to think of as natural, and now we can intercede.
Let me ask you all, starting with you, maybe, Jim Peterson. I mean, what is the new world of, with Androgel in the rack going to be like? We've talked about pecs and athletes. What about trial lawyers? What about writers? Andrew Sullivan said he writes better and faster and more confidently. In a more masculine world, if that's what we're approaching, what's it going to be like?
I'll answer that. I've been covering a trial in Milwaukee for the past 8 weeks. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms arrested 17 members of the Outlaws motorcycle gang. And on the first day, I walked in. The trial now is down to 9 defendants, and I walked into a courtroom where there were 9 lawyers, 9 bikers, and 12 U.S. marshals. And you could not tell who were the defendants and who were the marshals. These guys had goatees. I mean, it was a room full of goatees. I said, what is this, Mark McGuire? Is this Nirvana? Is this, you know, they're all in their 30s. They all, you know, this room just seethed with testosterone. And I was sitting in this courtroom, and I could see people's temples pulse. And I'm sitting there saying, my temples don't pulse. This was clenched jaw territory. And there was one guy, his temple pulse, it looked like he had gills. He was breathing testosterone. And the lawyers were, you know, outside the courtroom, the lawyers were doing Tai Chi kicks over each other's head. I mean, this is the most competitive room. And you couldn't tell them apart. And as the trial has unfolded, it turns out these are guys, you know, that the police and the bikers work out in the same gym. Mm-hmm. They share the same steroids. They share the same painkillers, the tamoxifen. That this is, it is amazing to cram that much testosterone into the justice system. Justice is a woman. It slows the testosterone down. But it is scary. These goatees, what did they do? Move their pubic hair up to their chin? I can't. It was a room. It is a
Michael
room.
Kimmel, help us out. It sounds like road rage 24/7.
Well, I got to say, I mean, I appreciate some of what Jim was saying before about this sort of masculinity in crisis and having to prove it. And I especially appreciate him mentioning the test by Lewis Terman, because in my book, Manhood in America, I actually include the entire masculinity femininity test, because I think it's a really great example of how men have tried to prove masculinity all along. But I want to take issue with two things. First, your statement, Chris, that it's a more masculine world that we're living in, I think it's exactly the opposite. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of the cultural reaction that we hear is, in fact, that we're living in a far more egalitarian world. Women are in the workplace to stay. They probably even edit Playboy magazine. They are everywhere we look. They are our colleagues, our coworkers, and our friends. They are, and in fact, I think that Jim has it exactly backwards. Phil Donahue and Alan Alda are exactly the role models for masculinity in the 21st century. Why? Because they share housework and childcare. Because they're egalitarian parents. Those, you know, the new study that just came out two days ago about how men are more interested in spending time with their families than getting ahead in their careers. This is the first time we've ever found that information in surveys. I think that you know, while we may idolize the Mark McGuires of the world, we actually have to learn how to do diapers. We actually have to learn how to fold the laundry. These are the kind of skills that we need. And if you think that, you know, testosterone is going to help us do that, in fact, it's exactly that, you know, our idea is that it's going to let us escape from that. Just as, you know, we don all of these Western or adventure signals when we go off to work in rather mundane, humdrum jobs. You know,
why is the, you know, wrestling more popular than God these days?
Oh, because it's an old Freudian saying that what you lose in reality, you recreate in fantasy. And it seems to me that statement could never be more true than now. I mean, look at what we wear. Look at what we drive. All of the you know, we go to offices that are these, you know, big buildings and faceless offices, and we live in little cubicles where we talk on telephones, and yet we wear Stetson cologne, Chaps. We drive Broncos and Cherokees. We wear denim shirts. I mean, we're constantly evoking a world that, in fact, doesn't exist any longer. So
can I jump in here a little bit?
Yeah, please.
I think there's a difference between a sense of what is masculine and what you're going to make feel better and what you're going to look like and want to feel like. And that really has nothing to do with testosterone. People who assume that they're going to take some androgel and turn into the creature that they described in the trial is unrealistic.
Exactly, I mean, my point. And that's why I...
Well, wait a second. Were the troopers and the bikers and the lawyers in the courtroom...
These are people who have who are narcissistic people, and they have a need of their own to be beyond what is physiologically possible. And for them to take a standard dose of androgel will not make them like this.
But here's my
these are people,
that's
these
my
are people who
here,
are
Chris.
Aggressive and hostile individuals whose all of their success in life is dependent upon their being aggressive and hostile. Let me give you a point that relates not so much to this extreme, but some point that relates to a real man in real time. Years ago, there was a study that was done by a colleague of mine, actually here in Georgia, in which she gave men who had borderline low testosterone values, not the very, very low values that we would say were really hypogonadal, but borderline low testosterone values, he gave them for 3 months injections of either testosterone or placebo, and then wanted to see what happened to their PSA and their cholesterol and things of that nature. And the study was what we call blinded. That is, the men got the injections. They didn't know which weeks they were getting the testosterone injections and which weeks they were getting the placebo injections, and the physicians didn't know this, but at the end of the study, every single man knew precisely the 3 month interval when he was on testosterone, and the reason for this was they said that they felt better and more effective in their business dealings and were more confident about how they could function in their social life, and the sense that testosterone levels brought up to a certain range makes men feel better has been proven scientifically. There's no problem about that.
Right.
The assumption, however, that you will be able to rev up everything by pumping up with testosterone is probably not accurate. For example, we know that in terms of erectile dysfunction, for example, we have a test where we can measure men's spontaneous ability to get erections in the middle of the night. This is called the nocturnal phenyltumescence test. Most men, independent of sexual desire, have erections in the middle of the night. Men with very low testosterone have virtually no levels. As you increase the testosterone levels, they get more and more erections during the night. And after a point that's in the middle of the physiologic range of testosterone, about 300 nanograms per deciliter, at that point, adding more testosterone does not increase their erectile capability. So that once you're in the normal range of testosterone, taking more testosterone is not going to make you sexier and more effective sexually. And that's a most important thing to recognize, because frequently when we see men in our office and we start them on some who are testosterone deficient, we start them on testosterone therapy, they say, oh my goodness, what am I going to have to do? Lock the doors because I'm going to be this wild man? None of that really happens. This is a fantasy that is not really based in any reality. But the reality is they feel better. They're more effective, they're more confident, and they do better in their business dealings when they have their testosterone back into the middle of the normal range. But driving into the supranormal range, the range that you see in the individuals who are on the covers of Muscle and Fitness magazine and things of this nature, that doesn't make them any more effective. And one of the other speakers spoke to the fact that they have testicles the size of peanuts. That's true. We see bodybuilders in the office. They are massive individuals. They can't even fit on the standard examining table. And when you examine them, their shoulders are on the wide side, and they have huge pecs and everything. And the enormous individual, you check their testicles, you could barely feel the testicular tissue there.
Dr. Sparks, stand by. I want to remind the callers that our phone is 1-800-423-8255. We're talking about the big T, testosterone, on all the magazine covers, coming this summer in gel form, androgel. 1-800-423-8255. We haven't talked yet about women and testosterone. We haven't really narrowed the question of whether all the Alan Aldas out there will be more Alan Alda with testosterone, less Hulk Hogan, perhaps. 1-800-423-TALK. Steve is on the line.
Yeah, Steve from Melrose on the line.
Thank you, Steve.
Greetings, folks. I have a sort of question which I would like to have you address, and I'll just listen off the air. To my knowledge, this is really the first century that men are living well into the 70s and 80s. In the past, they lived short, brutish lives, and throughout their lives, they had the testosterone at peak levels. Now we're living into our 70s and 80s and beyond, and we're coping with declining testosterone, and I'm wondering if the demographics have anything to do with it. Thank you. I'll take my answer off the air.
Steve, thank you.
Excellent point.
Jim Peterson?
We used to live to the age of 45. This wasn't an issue for most of mankind for most of time. One of the first letters I ever encountered as the Playboy advisor was someone saying, is it true that a male sexual peak is at age 17 before he's having sex and that it declines after that? And I spent two decades saying, no, my sexual peak is next weekend, I hope. but we had this sort of image of perfected manhood by age 17, and you read articles widely.
Jim Peterson, keep it up. Hold the thought. We're going to come right back. We're talking about testosterone on The Connection with Jim Peterson of Playboy, Michael Kimmel of the Gender Society, and Dr. Richard Spark of Sexual Health for Men. This is The Connection from WBUR. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is the Testosterone Connection with Dr. Richard Spark, the Playboy advisor Jim Peterson, the sociologist and writer Michael Kimmel. Joining us by phone is Robert Sapolsky, professor of neuroscience at Stanford University. He's the author of The Trouble with Testosterone and other essays on the biology of the human predicament. Dr. Sapolsky, it's good to have you here. I wish you'd make the connection between testosterone and not just aggression and violence, but those other good things like effectiveness, confidence, other more manageable social human qualities in the male and the female.
And not to mention libido.
Yeah. How should we think of testosterone?
No, it's a hormone that has a broad array of effects on the brain, and it's certainly, depending on what your sort of perspective is, it's oversold as being part of aggression or potentially oversold as being part of sexual behavior. It has a broad array of effects, and its receptors are found throughout the brain. It does lots of stuff. It has effects on cognition. There's all sorts of studies that suggest kids rather early in life are already having somewhat testosterone-dependent differences in the style with which they look at the world. A certain male cognitive style is to see larger picture things, what is called a global versus a local perspective in neuropsych testing. Does lots of stuff as a hormone. There's not a whole lot of hormones out there who content themselves with doing only one thing.
Andrew Sullivan's piece made it a very key difference in all human encounters. Not just in sort of deal making and trial courtroom scenes, but I suppose he made it the key to success in almost every kind of realm. How do you want to correct that view?
Well, I would just say I'm sort of very politely horrified by that view. The science simply isn't there for it, and his piece was, you know, very personally based. It was highly anecdotal, and that's the sort of thing that has a certain anecdotal validity, but it's not the sort of thing scientists admit as sort of terribly acceptable evidence. there is a lot of evidence out there. People have been studying the effects of testosterone on the brain and behavior for a long time, and what you have is it's basically a pretty overrated hormone. What is absolutely clear is you need some of the stuff to have male typical behaviors, and you could debate endlessly what really counts as male typical, but what's clear is once you get within the normal range, a very wide range of normal, roughly 10% to 200% of what's normal, you get the same exact effects.
How is the Androgel world coming this summer going to be different? Are you worried about it?
I'm more worried about the expectations about it than about it itself. You know, it's going to make life a lot easier for folks who have a legitimate disease-based suppression of testosterone and get your levels below 10% of normal or so, and that's something that does need to be corrected, and it's great that it's going to be correctable with a gel rather than injections. For one thing, it's easier, it's less painful, and you would much rather have relatively constant levels of the stuff in the bloodstream rather than the sort of spikes that Sullivan was describing, which is what you see in terms of going out and, you know, this is the cure-all for the 50-somethings for whom testosterone levels decline a little bit during aging. That decline is not responsible for much of anything, and this is not going to be the cure for it.
Jim Peterson, Michael Kimmel, or Dr. Spark, did you have a thought or a question?
I'd like to comment on that. I agree in general that I think a lot of it has been oversold, and a lot of this has to do with the fantasies that people have about what's going to happen to them if they take some additional testosterone. There are some data, however, that are very intriguing, that if you take men and you follow them for a long period of time and you give them either a testosterone patch or a placebo patch to wear and change every day so that they will either have an increase in their testosterone level or over the passage of time, a gradual decrease in testosterone level in the placebo-treated men, you find a very, very interesting thing happens. And what that is men rate how they feel about their overall health. This is a study that was done recently in Philadelphia, and it's included in the book because we think it's so important. These are men with borderline low testosterone values who were given a testosterone patch or placebo patch, and they were asked to estimate their general sense of health and well-being, how well they felt about themselves. And there is, within our book on sexual health of men, there's a bar graph that shows that men who were on the testosterone patch had a general sense of improved well-being that was progressive over the 3 years of their treatment, where men who were on the placebo patch had a progressive decline over these 3 years. These were men who were in their mid-60s when they started this treatment. So there are some unquestionable benefits to taking this versus placebo. I agree about the Andrew Sullivan piece in the regard that he took this and did not have the opportunity to see what would happen if he took a placebo, for example.
Yep.
All of the treatment-based data that we have is comparing a medication to placebo. For example, in the original Viagra trials, 24% of the men who were on placebo maintained they had stronger and firmer erections. This, again, is something we... And this is... The Viagra group had 70% had stronger and firmer erections, and it was the difference between the 70% and the 24% that validated Viagra's effectiveness as a good medication.
Robert Sapolsky, I know we've got to let you go. Do you want a last word?
Yeah, I completely agree with the notion this is wonderfully corrective if we're talking pathology or borderline cases of disease. I don't think it's going to have much to do with normative stuff. I think males have to face the reality of normative aging without something like a gel as a panacea.
Robert Sapolsky, thank you for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
Robert Sapolsky's book is called The Trouble with Testosterone. He will be speaking at MIT today, May 5th, at 4 o'clock in room E25-111. Thank you for joining us. 1-800-423-8255 joins the testosterone connection.
Chris, I wanted to follow up if I could.
Michael Kimmel, please.
Yeah, just a quick point. And, you know, I've listened to Dr. Sparks talking a lot about the medical treatment of men with low levels of testosterone, and I have no doubt that there are medical interventions like testosterone, like Androgel, that are going to be effective for them. My concern is, I have two, one of which is that the minute Viagra hit the market, it was easily available without a prescription over the internet to anybody who wanted it. You know, I'm My my 15-month-old son could buy it if he wanted it. Mm-hmm. Anybody can buy this. My sense is Androgel will be equally available within minutes after it hits the market,
yep,
without a prescription, over the internet, by plenty of unscrupulous physicians who would be happy to write a script for anybody. Now, my concern then is the cultural one. Why do men feel like they need it? I'm not talking about the men that Dr. Sparks treats. I'm talking about men in general, the guys that Jim and I have been talking about, that men in general feel a flagging sense of masculinity, a kind of almost resignation about sort of about how we feel as men, and we need to pump up somehow. Well, we can go work out, but that takes a lot of time and energy. Better to slap on a patch or slap on some gel or take an injection. That's instant. So, that, to my sense, that's what we should be talking about in a way. Is why now?
Well, let's talk about
why
it.
Are men feeling this way?
I want to put it to connection listeners. Do men really feel they need it? And if so, why? Do you, connection listeners? 1-800-423-8255. Melanie is on the line.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I hope you can hear me. I'm on a cordless phone.
This is perfect.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned because this discussion focuses exclusively on men, and testosterone is not solely a male hormone. There are women doing research on this area. It's very important to women, and I have to say that I would like the doctor, if he could, to address the importance of this in dealing not with recreational bulking up for women, but with real medical problems. It's an issue that gets far too little attention, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Dr. Spark?
Yes, I think that the caller is 100% correct. There has been a great deal of enthusiasm to look at precisely what testosterone does in women, and the group that has been examined in most detail are menopausal women. During menopause, the women's ovaries stop making estrogens, and that gives them the menopausal symptoms of hot flashes and other symptoms. But the ovaries also stop making testosterone. And several years ago, there was some interest in replacing not just the estrogen with the standard hormone replacement therapy we give to women, but also estrogen plus testosterone, because women noted a decline in their libido at the time when their estrogen level fell, and the estrogen replacement therapy, the standard treatment that was given, was not in and of itself sufficient, so that there was some enthusiasm for giving testosterone supplements in addition to estrogen therapy to women to correct that problem. And there is a medication on the market that has a combination of estrogen and testosterone in a pill form that has been used for some time to correct this.
Melanie,
so the speaker is correct.
And Melanie, I hope that helps. 1-800-423-8255. Jason is on the line.
Hello.
Hello, Jason.
Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I wanted to bring up the social implications of the use, or I should say abuse more so, of the testosterone. I really think it's kind of the opposite. People seem to abuse it. In fact, I would say that they must be wimps to be using it. I wanted to compare the difference between a European model of what's masculine and an American model.
Are we talking a German model or an Italian model here?
just more of a general European idea of what is masculine. It seems to me that it's not a pumped up type of masculinity like you see in the U.S. People driving around in SUVs to prove, you know, the bigger the car, the bigger the man behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I think in Europe, content more than surface defines what is considered masculine, and I wish that there'd be a more of an emphasis on wisdom being considered a masculine feature. And in the United States, it seems to be quite the opposite. Guns and Arnold Schwarzenegger and SUVs mean you're a bigger or stronger and therefore more of a man.
What about that Jim Peterson say? What's the future of a sort of only wimps use Androgel bumper sticker?
Real men don't pump iron. There's... you know, we do have this odd male model. Like, look at Joe Piscopo. He was a comedian until he pumped up. And then all America looked at him and said, this is strange. There's something wrong about a stand-up comedian who can bench 300 pounds. We have a very confused sense of masculinity. Masculinity, by definition, is diverse. If you look at all species,
the male is smarter and dumber, stronger and weaker. We exist in the extremes. We exist in diversity, and it's almost impossible to say, oh, this is masculine. But to go back and address something, the Alan Alda, Phil Donahue, I remember the first time I walked into a men's room, and there was a changing table. There were two changing tables. I had my baby, and a good friend of mine had his child along, and we turned it into a calf roping contest. 10 seconds, done! And I said, this is masculinity applied to diaper changing. I don't think any woman has ever turned diaper changing into a race. There are things that are clearly masculine. You know it when you feel it, that this is a masculine moment. That you start looking at, the good things that we categorize as male behavior, Cubs fans is masculine behavior. Men will congregate in groups of 50,000 to watch other men excel. This is masculine behavior. I can't think of anything that causes women to congregate in numbers of 50,000 outside of a sale at Filene's basement. And is testosterone the cause of this? There is something that is, that testosterone begins before birth. It bathes the egg. It turns you into a male child rather than a female child. Women have testosterone and it performs a vital function for them, but it is something, it is the core of masculinity, but it doesn't give us the script. It just gives us the energy. It gives us the inclination, the curiosity, and in its extreme form, it's ridiculous. That weightlifter article I mentioned earlier, the guy with the testicles the size of peanuts, the article ends with this guy confessing he knew he had had too much when he found himself trying to have sex with the Coke machine outside of his motel room, and you go, okay, I've been there.
Chris, I got to say that
Michael Kimmel,
some of Jim's last comments actually make me think that your caller was really onto something. What does it say about yourself as a man that you feel like that your masculinity is such that you can't find your masculinity by looking within at a sense of inner integrity, at a sense of responsibility, of taking care of a community? I like watching ball games as I certainly wouldn't put myself with a Cubs fan being a New Yorker, but certainly I like watching ball games as much as anybody else. But it seems to me that we're missing the point celebrating these great moments of masculinity like they do at the Citadel. It seems to me also that we also might want to spend some time looking at the kinds of values that we also associate with masculinity: honor, integrity, ethics, responsibility. Those things are not going to be coming out of tubes that we're going to be spreading all over our bodies.
Well, that's the whole question. I mean, are these values or are they chemicals?
I think we have to distinguish between whether or not these particular traits that were just described really relate to testosterone or they don't relate to testosterone, and that can be studied. In point of fact, you're right, they don't relate to testosterone. And to believe that all of these things do relate to testosterone is a level of naivete that is unfortunate, and it deals with sort of the popular fantasies. What you really have to do is find out what testosterone can do, who's going to benefit, and who won't benefit. Bear in mind that while it is likely that testosterone will be available over the androgel will be available over the internet, so was Viagra for a while, and it turns out to be a very expensive proposition to get a hold of it. More importantly, you must understand that testosterone derivatives are now available as underground products for all of the bodybuilders and athletes. They don't go to the doctor's office to get the testosterone. They use their own sources to do this. And there is people who bulk up have a book called The Anabolic Steroid User's Bible. And The Anabolic Steroid User's Bible is an extraordinary thing. It is printed on blue paper, so it can't be photocopied. It's considered so valuable. And it describes strategies for using these underground medications, which are readily available mostly through different gyms and exercise individuals as underground medication. That will always be available.
Stand by.
Speak to the androgel at all.
Stand by, Dr. Spark. 1-800-423-8255 makes the testosterone connection. Skip is on the line.
Good morning.
Morning, Skip.
I may have missed the first part of your show. My actual name is Dr. Harrison Pope, and I'm a researcher on abuse of testosterone anabolic steroids by kids, just as you were discussing. And I'm very apprehensive about the appearance of the gel, because prior to this time, kids have usually had to inject testosterone, and having it in a gel form will make it much more readily available in the underground and used by a wider number of kids in the gym. We've just come out with a new book called The Adonis Complex about the whole issue of male body obsession. And we found that probably between 1 and 2 million American men have used anabolic steroids, including testosterone. And my hunch is that this will cause a further uptick in steroid abuse over the course of the next year or two.
Can I speak to that?
Dr. Spark.
You're 100% correct. There have been a lot of abuse of testosterone in adolescents. We have a whole section on that in the book, a chapter called The Testosterone Renaissance, where we talk to the use and abuse of what are called anabolic steroids, muscle-building steroids, by athletes, and the fact that there has been an increased use among adolescents. It's hard to know where they get it. I'm not entirely sure that having the androgel available will make it easier for them. Most of the youngsters who use it use testosterone or testosterone derivative pills. There are plenty of these available. The basic problem with these, as opposed to the injections, is that the testosterone derivative pills are hepatotoxic. They cause damage to the liver. And the problems that they can cause are a condition associated with blood-filled cysts of the liver. In addition to the blood-filled cysts of the liver, they can also cause hepatic carcinoma. So these are dangerous medications.
Don't try these things at home or otherwise, kids. Stand by, Dr. Spark. 1-800-423-TALK is the phone. Gil is on a car phone.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Good, Gil.
Terrific. Real quick question. First of all, let me say I'm not a wimp, and I don't need to bulk up. What I am interested in is, as a 60-year-old man who had a vasectomy 30 years ago, what are the implications for that in terms of testosterone level, and is this a good application for the patch?
What would you want to get out of it, Gil?
Well, possibly increase sexual appetite, the notion that was mentioned before was that feel better while at work, more energy, that kind of thing.
Jim Peterson, do you want to give a non-licensed prescription here?
Vasectomy just cuts the route for semen. It doesn't affect hormonal production. So
is Gil a good candidate for androgel or not?
It's apples and oranges. It's not.
No, but he's talking about effectiveness, confidence, you know, sort of viability in the workplace or in his life as well as in bed.
He is a marketer's dream. This is exactly the middle-aged, I'm calling 60 middle-aged. This is a middle-aged man's complaint now that this is, we want the energy of our youth. This Viagra was, it's interesting. As a journalist, I've watched articles come and go, and the Andrew Sullivan article was the same article Freud wrote about cocaine, was the same article that people wrote about jogging, that it's the same article you could write about caffeine and Starbucks, that you just fill in the blank. This makes me feel better is the root of all snake oil. It's a standard article. This makes me, you know, and I have over the years kept there's a kind of economic index. I remember at the height of the cocaine craze in the 70s or 80s, someone ran an article that said a gram of cocaine costs $100. Well, let's institute, instead of the gold standard, let's have a cocaine standard. And for the price of an eighth of an ounce of cocaine, you could buy a 35-inch TV. You could spend a week in Bermuda. And then there was an adrenaline index. What does it cost to have an adrenaline experience?
Everybody's had a chance here to give a warning or a diss. Michael Kimmel, can you do yours in a few seconds?
Well, I think that the caller who is concerned about, you know, abuse and young boys looking for ways to prove their manhood was exactly spot on, and I think that every one of us is aware of the dangers of abuse, and I think that it has that the message of Dr. Sparks has to be the message that we all take out
okay.
of it, which is it's to treat medical conditions that are diagnosable, not a cultural antidote to flagging masculinity.
Michael Kimmel, thank you. And everybody else, Jim Peterson, Dr. Spark, Robert Sapolsky, thank you. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation.
PRI, Public Radio International.
This is WBUR. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by thepictureframefactory.com, offering hundreds of unique and handcrafted artisan frames now online at thepictureframefactory.com. By Direct Hire Auto Service of Watertown, Norwood, Peabody, and Natick.